process, not outcome. There are no silver bullets that make it really easy overnight.
Gotta trust the process, which I've been doing.
Right now.
Just walk, keep walking on my game.
Trust the process.
Now you really have to face yourself in the mirror every day and look at the reality of what's here, the reality of what you need.
Trust the process.
Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, proudly brought to you by LL Pavorsky Jewelers, where Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged. 707 Walnut in Philadelphia. I think 43 of them now. Always at llpavorsky.com. My name is Spike Eskin, along with a guy who just broke a pretty huge story to me that he wrote something for the podcast. That is Liberty Ballers' own Mike Levin. Good morning, Mike.
Wow. What a weekend.
What a weekend. All right.
How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. I thought you were asleep last night when you weren't tweeting. I was like, if I know Spike's sleep schedule, like I think I do.
No, so
I think he's asleep and missing all of this.
So we went to dinner with Amos last night and then went to see Mutlu, who's a friend of Amos and is another process truster and was performing last night. And when we sat down for dinner, Amos looked at my wife and he goes, "We are not going to discuss the process at all at dinner tonight." So there was no processing last night. And then at the end of the night, a guy I work with, Dave, texted me and he was like, "The deal is done. I can't believe it's done." And I was like, "Oh my God." And then walking out of the show, some guy comes up to me and he's like, "So what do you think? Is he going to get done?" And I was like, "Here it is." I was out of process land for about 4 hours, but that was it. So
can't get away from it.
Yeah.
Cause so the Woj stuff, you didn't get to follow along really the progression of the trade stuff? Because it was like, it's kind of happening. And then Woj said, it's going to be our 3 Lakers pick and Kings pick. And I had heard some stuff that was like, I don't think this is true, but I'm not a reporter. I'm not going to contradict Woj. So right. I was like, this is not the stuff that I've heard, but like, you know, maybe they're wrong or thing has changed or whatever, or Ainge got more leverage when the Sixers started pretty much announcing that the trade happened. And then Embiid took pictures by Markelle Fultz's locker. I mean, it was a little crazy.
The deal had
to be like officially agreed upon and done.
Well, let me tell you, because if it hadn't and it broke down, yes, we would have the egg. There are not enough chickens to lay enough eggs to be on all of our faces. All right, wait a minute. You're not getting out of the iTunes reviews. So we'll get into last night. Let me do the thing. The podcast, The Rights to Ricky Sanchez, welcome if you're new. It is available wherever podcasts are distributed. That is iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, and TuneIn. We are well on our way to 1,000 Apple Podcast / iTunes reviews. We want yours. We are at 631. When we hit
the biggest trade in franchise history, and you're reading.
Yeah.
Yes. iTunes.
Yes. Yes. Now, and when we get to 1,000, I'm going to read all the reviews on a podcast that you're not going to be a part of.
And no one has to listen to it.
No one has to listen to it, but some probably will. All right. So based on our Friday night podcast, I get to read two reviews, but they're both about you. So I wanted to throw them at you because I think they're both interesting. All right.
Bring them on.
5 stars. The subject line is "Sign Tony Roten again. I drunkenly saw Levin and Alyssa at the Westfield Pico AMC once, and they were very shocked and scared. Please don't read each review when you hit 1,000.
I remember that guy. Yeah.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Wait, hold on. The other one is really good. We also got a 1 star recently too. All right. So this is from Preacher of Death, 5 stars. Need you to read this to Mike, Spike. My girlfriend is a process truster who auditioned for a show in front of Mike a few weeks back.
Oh God.
She was too professional to mention it, but I am not. I imagine females who are down with TTP are statistical rarity, but the number of females who are pursuing acting and happen to be brought in for a Mike Levin pilot has to be has to be one person. I feel this information is too important to be kept to myself. It's well known that the likelihood of success on any project increases exponentially with each addition of a process truster, so it's in everyone's best interest to link up on this. Read this on the show and have Mike tell me what I need to do to get through the red tape. Thanks, guys.
I wish I knew who his girlfriend was.
Thanks, guys, and stop talking about trading Ben Simmons. That's from both of us.
That's fair.
All right.
That's very funny. Very funny.
All right, so later on the podcast, we have Godner himself, Derek Bodner. Make sure you subscribe to his coverage at derekbodner.com. It is $3 a month, the price of a cup of coffee, and is worth every penny. Support great journalism. And one more final plug, and then we'll get into it. So the official Sixers draft party is at the Piazza in Northern Liberties. And it's sold out. All the tickets are gone. But there is a record store inside the Piazza called Creep Records. And they made a Sam Hinkie memorial patch that you could put on a jersey. It's like a black patch that says SH on it. And I told them I would plug it if they would make a donation to an animal shelter. And they made a really nice donation to the Mainline Animal Shelter. So if you're at the party, you can buy the patch and they'll put it on for you, or you can just order it online. All right. So last night. So that reminds me, the way you were talking about the Woj thing actually reminds me of the first Sam Hinkie trade, in that the Drew Holiday Nerlens trade was reported incorrectly at first.
Too. Yes, because it was Drew and a pick for Nerlens.
Right.
And that contradicted what very young Jake Pavorsky was texting me about, saying it's the opposite. And again, I think Woj just has a blockage for pro process trades.
I think, looking at also we have to mention about Retweet Armageddon too. So
we'll get there.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the trade and how you feel.
All right. So I think maybe because we had set ourselves up for the trade to be so much stuff, so many assets and so many first round picks, and we were all in on the, whatever it takes, just don't trade Covington. When I read it, and I read it again, and then I even DM'd Derek this morning, because the way he wrote it was a little like, maybe I wasn't understanding it. And I was just like, wait a minute. So this is just the three, which in my head is canceled out because we're getting the one.
Yep.
And one other first, basically. It's the Lakers pick, as long as it is between 2 and 5. And if it isn't between 2 and 5, then it becomes the Kings pick. And that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it'll boil down. I'm excited to – I know we're jumping a little bit, but
yeah,
there will be a lottery party next year.
Yes.
Of course.
Which is
– and it'll be interesting to see what we're rooting for at the lottery party, like based on where the Lakers land, if it's a clear cut number one, if we wanted to do that, or if we're like, no, we'd rather it fall at like 6, and so we can keep the Kings pick, something like that. It'll be like, we'll have to like come up with a rationale for like cheering and what we're rooting for, and that's exciting to me.
Yeah, because it's weird and it's on brand, and it also shows that Brian Colangelo and his front office staff really care about us and the lottery party, because
that is, yeah. So that conspiracy theory from the other day is false.
Wrong. And look, let's be real about, I think always, even if it's not in our best interest, we cheer for the Lakers pick to be number one, because getting another number one pick is hilarious. But to cheer for it to be between 2 and 5 so we get another lottery party.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We definitely
That might be it.
Yeah.
That might be it. It might be like, hopefully the Lakers are finished like 3rd or 4th, and we hope they like drop 2 spots.
Yes. So it's the worst of the best. Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The other thing that you have to think
about. There was rumor about that 2021 Sixers first rounder.
Right.
But that has since gone away.
Yeah. It's just the one extra pick. That's what it is. It's the one extra pick.
And that's really very little.
It's fair. What it comes down to, and it's really hilarious to know that, if you believe the rumors, and I do, that the Lakers were interested in that pick, that the fact that they couldn't trade for the number one pick is because we had their pick, and we traded their pick for it. And really, when you think, the reason that they're so hampered is because we have their 2018 pick, which means they can't trade their 2019 pick, which means that they can't trade a pick until 2020. And then if you think about, if they think their only mega valuable asset that they don't want to trade is Brandon Ingram, the rest of what they have is like different levels of junk, you know, in terms of moving up. So you got to think what it comes down to is the Celtics just didn't want Fultz, and we had the best that they felt like they, whether they're getting Josh Jackson or Ball at three, if they're getting extra value on top. I mean, that has to be the motivation.
I think it's going to be Tatum. I people keep saying it's Josh Jackson. He's a really terrible fit with Jaylen Brown.
Yeah,
like,
because they're the same guy.
Their skills
are
somewhat derivative.
Right.
So I just can't see that happening. Everyone's like assuming it's going to be Josh Jackson, but it seems more like a Jason Tatum thing. I don't know. But yeah, I think the Celtics pretty much at this point were like, we like our backcourt. We were the best team in the East this year, record-wise. We're not in a position where we feel like we need to rebuild or even like turn the keys over to a 19-year-old kid. I understand the rationale, but if they're just like, yo, let's keep building for the future, let's keep accruing assets and try to make something happen with a Paul George or a Jimmy Butler deal. I see where they're coming from. I understand, but this doesn't seem like enough for them to move down in this draft.
You know, now that I'm thinking about it, you're right. I think what we
three to one is a huge jump.
As much as it pains me to do this, and it really does, do you think maybe to make this more fair, if Ainge is listening, I don't want to do this really because the guy, the elite post skills, but do you think we should throw in Okafor? I mean, I don't. Do we really want to do the deal if we have to put it in Okafor? Look. If that's what it takes, but if Danny Ainge is listening to this, you know, the guy, would you call them generational post skills?
I mean, it's 11 a.m. on a Sunday. He's probably waking up right now getting 20 and 10.
Yes, right. Only 19 years old. So if we have to throw in Okafor, you know, I think, and you have to give... Yeah, I think we're all scared of Brian Colangelo getting fleeced here, but he didn't. And at worst, it's a fair trade. I look at it as this is Brian Colangelo's allowance that he was given to spend. And we are watching, you know, as parents, we're like, okay, go spend your allowance. Let's see how you spent your money. And he spent it. It checks all the boxes, man. It's not too much. It gets us what we want. It creates, and this is another thing I want to talk about, just the excitement over value or whatever. But and it also allows us to keep the lottery party. I don't know how he could have
Do you think
done
that was a consideration for him?
It had
He's
to
like,
be.
Well, lottery party, two to five, they'll probably still have a lottery party.
Right, you would definitely have a lottery party.
I think he wants a banner in his name, I think. I think he's like, I'm angling for it.
Somebody tweeted at me, all right, so next year the lottery party – warm, heartfelt round of applause for Brian Colangelo and then Hinkie statue.
I mean, yes, obviously none of this would happen without Hinkie. We got the pick swap, swap trade, which was still my favorite trade ever, to get up to from 5 to 3, and then the MCW trade, which was pretty universally panned, at least mainstream wise. Everyone that pays attention to the Sixers was like, no, he's bad. It was just trading the rookie of the year. How could you trade the rookie of the year for a pick that, you know, will probably – your dad kept saying it was going to be like a lottery pick 6 years ago.
Yeah. And how lucky are we that it hasn't conveyed yet?
I mean, yeah. So we've thought about that as like, oh, it's kind of an unlucky thing. Now all of a sudden the 3 years of Lakers pick just sliding in at two has totally worked out for us. It's funny that way. The universe, man.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that the fact that we got quote unlucky over the last few years ended up working out in that respect. I just, and the other thing I guess that you know, I thought about, I was thinking about this morning on my run, as I oftentimes think about these things, is like, you know, at a certain point with this, we are fans, we are not officially journalists, and I would hardly call myself an NBA analyst or anything, and we are fans that want the Sixers to do well. And really, at a certain point, I think the reason that we were okay with trade whatever is getting the best guy again and getting him, and it's just exciting, and it's going to be fun, and ultimately, we want this to be fun, and this is really fun.
I think we have the benefit of we have a ton of Hinkie set us up so well, and I did a podcast with Sam Vecenie, which is now like totally worthless because of this. Of the Fultz news.
Well,
but
think
it
about
was
all of our podcasts for the last 6 weeks.
Yeah, true. Or six, 4 years.
Yeah.
Or I basically was just like, you know, Hinkie said it's a pretty unfuck-upable situation, right? So like if he traded all of the Sixers assets to move up to Fultz, then he still has Fultz, Embiid, and Simmons, and probably Covington and Dario and a couple two-way players and like a bunch of cap room. And, you know, our own lottery pick. Like, there's the things. It's just, there's the chest is so, was so overflowing that he could do this and still be fine. And he could overpay. And he didn't. And it really wasn't one. And I'm surprised that Ainge accepted this trade. But we couldn't be in better shape. The Fultz fit with Simmons and Embiid's fit around Simmons is just perfect. Guys that can shoot and create a little bit themselves. No one's going to have to shoulder too much of a load at first. The spacing's going to be awesome. Transition's going to be ridiculous. I just can't believe it's real. I truly can't believe it happened.
And the photo of Embiid, Simmons, Fultz, and Covington.
Yeah.
And somebody...
And Dario would have been there. He was in the other picture with him and Embiid and Fultz's locker. So
I tweeted out and called it Mount Process, and somebody responded with the perfect Mount Trustmore of mm-hmm. those four guys. It's going to be a really fun season.
I feel so great. Covington's going to shoot 65% from three.
Now, are you? I also had this awful feeling. Did you see all of MCW's replies this morning, by the way?
Yeah, I didn't want to retweet. I feel bad. I don't want to get involved in that. I feel bad for the guy. He's had a tough time.
It's funny.
It's funny for sure, but he's had a tough time, so I didn't want to shed much more light on it. I feel he's just a guy who's, you know,
in case,
not as good as the rookie of the year indicates.
In case people don't know, like all at once, people started tweeting at him, thank you. So when you look at his replies, it's all for what, for what, for what. And then there's one to Tony Roten. I didn't see what the Tony Roten tweet was, that he just responded back, sheesh, I thought. But I don't know what the Tony Roten tweet was. So, and then, this is scattered. Guys, this was going to be scattered if you're listening to this. I want to thank, I'm completely shocked at how our podcast has become a like part of basketball Twitter and the internet, like in a holistic way and not just Sixers. Seeing Jason Concepcion from the Ringer network, if you know him on Twitter, tweet out our podcast all on his own, calling it important on Saturday, was pretty awesome. I don't know. I was pretty starstruck.
You know, we're a segment in there in a weird like everyone sort of usually ignores us, but then when Sixers news comes around, it's like, yeah, all right, let's check what these fucking wackos are talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, feels good.
All right, let me see what else I had on the list here.
I got so many things else on the list.
Okay. Do you just want to get Derek on and go through the things with Derek? Because not yet.
Almost. Right. I want to talk about because you remember. Someone asked us on Twitter, remember how pre-lottery I was saying that I would feel guilty if we got the number one pick. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do remember that.
And someone asked us, is it better to get Fultz like this or should we have just won the lottery? Obviously, we would have kept the pick if we had just won the lottery and it worked out and the lottery party would have been once again insane. But I would have felt really guilty about it. So I actually personally, as much as obviously I'd rather keep one of the Lakers or Kings picks, I actually feel personally better about I feel like we earned it more. I feel like we deserve it more. I feel less guilt about us having the number one pick 2 years in a row.
Well, we got a second exciting day out of it too. We got the lottery, and then we got this.
It's all about exciting days.
Whatever. Yeah, we got dollar bills, dollar bill, the draft picks as dollar bills just falling out of our pockets. You know, if it costs us an extra draft pick to have an extra exciting day, I'm all for it.
Yeah. So I don't feel guilty about it. I can't imagine. I mean, it's so perfect. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I you got to give Colangelo credit on Father's Day. It's unreal.
Yeah, I'm fine with Brian Colangelo right now. I'm fine. We're good. We're good, buddy. You know, I'm going to make this as a statement. How about this? From this point on, I judge him only by his actions. And I will actually say that I think I've been overwhelmingly, given the circumstances, fair to him. You know, like I've always said that it's not his fault what his father did and so on and so forth.
And you have insight into that.
Right. In my entire life. I'm saying from this point on, even though Sam's my favorite, Brian is on level ground. He has done has not messed up anything, pulled off a great trade to get us Markelle Fultz, and we're good. We're good.
Yeah, my only issue was the handling of the Nerlens Jahlil stuff.
Right.
But, and just like literally everything he's ever said in an interview.
Right, but I'm good. I'm saying
You got to be good. Let's go. I think the Sergio Rodriguez, Jared Bayless, Gerald Henderson, was just like to appease ownership and just be like, hey, like under the guise of we're trying to be decent and surrounding Embiid with like humans. So there's a lot of anti-process like last gasps on the internet right now. People were like, well, I always said that there's like a lot of goalposts moving. Oh, well, I always said that like you, of course, if you lose forever, then with no end in sight, then you can get enough draft picks to do this. And it's clearly it didn't work because he got fired. So, but well, that's I was right. And it's like, dog, shut the fuck up. For the love of God, just take the L. It's embarrassing how people are so unwilling to just be like, oh, yeah, I was just impatient and wrong. Like, that's all it was. We were willing to be patient. The whole fucking thing was that we were willing to be patient. And the idea of like 3 or 4 wasted years, there was a decade of wasted years before. The whole Sixers franchise has pretty much been wasted years. We can take a couple years off, accrue picks, be patient, and then cash them in. And now here we are.
Here we are.
It was always worth it.
Here we are. The grass is green. The sun is shining, waving to you from the right side of history. That's where we are. Yeah.
We've always been on the right side of history. We've said that from the fucking get-go. It's insane. I have a thing that I wrote.
All right.
I wrote some things down, and then we'll get Derek.
All right. I want to be respectful to Derek. That's all. Okay.
Yeah. Well, didn't you say 8:15 or something?
No, I said 10, but that's why. Okay. That's why I'm getting all right.
So I am positing that there has been no more dramatic team in sports than the Sixers the last, I guess, 4 years. Like 4 or 5 years. Would you agree? Because I'm about to run some shit down for you.
I would say, actually, believe it or not, the only team that I would say is in the same universe is probably the Patriots, given the
Deflategate
and even Trump stuff and Super Bowls and all that stuff. I would say that the Patriots are sort of in that realm.
Maybe. Well, let me run this down. This is things I wrote down. I scrubbed through some old Liberty Ballers articles and some old rights to Ricky Sanchez's.
Wow. You did a bunch
of work. See what we talked about. I did a little bit of work last night. So it was a decade of mediocrity and aimlessness and just obscurity after Iverson. And then finally, like the Bynum trade,
right.
The knee loop, the flamenco dancing, the bowling, the hair, then Hinkie and the Drew trade, not hiring a coach until August, Royce White, Hawes not giving a single fuck, MCW rookie of the year, Embiid injury, draft him anyway, Dario's never coming over, Jason Richardson played, KJ's mom, MCW trade, KJ trade, former Sixer JaVale McGee, former Sixer Andre Kirilenko, another Embiid injury, Okafor draft, Dario's still not coming over, pick swap trade, Okafor law trouble, Okafor's dad, Kendall Marshall's dad, all the fucking process arguments, the losing streak, league forces Colangelo on us, Ish returns, Elton Brand played, barely avoiding the worst record of all time, Hinkie ran out of town, the Hinkie letter, Colangelo hires his kid without any hiring process, Hinkie billboard, Sixers win the lottery, draft Ben Simmons, Simmons' injury, Dario came over, Embiid plays, Embiid nicknames himself the process, minutes restriction, January, TJ game winner at the Garden, Embiid gets hurt, they play him anyway, he dominates on national TV, never plays again, Nerlens trade, Okafor's meniscus, Covington's meniscus, everybody's meniscus. And now we're here, days before the 2017 draft, about 5 years after the Bynum trade, the rebuild has finally ended. We were right. We have the brightest future in all of sports. We were always right. And it feels good.
I got to tell you, Mike, that sounds like a t-shirt to me.
All of it?
Yeah, all of it. Come on, dude. We no half measures here. I like my favorite part about that whole thing was the major news events mixed in with Hinkie billboard.
I had to throw it in there. Yeah. I started off smaller and it just kept growing and growing. Like, yeah. There were some things that I left out that I didn't even want to. But
Can we post this somewhere? Can I post it on?
Yeah, I'll send it to you.
Okay, so I'll post it in the. I'll make it a separate post in the on the Rights to Ricky Sanchez site.
All of it, man. It's been a weird. I will always say that these 4 or 5 years were better than the decade prior.
Honestly,
with just like gamelessness and the like. Having to like boo Iguodala for like not being a star when he's just a really, really good player.
I wouldn't trade these 4 or 5 years for anything.
I wouldn't. I wouldn't do it at all. But it has been, it has certainly been a trying few years.
Yeah, I was.
No one's gotten into more frustrating arguments with family members or strangers than we have.
No.
We're very good at it by now.
I was on CBS Sports Radio with John Kincaid this morning, and he said, is there anything that you're, aside from injury, he goes, is there anything that you're scared of moving forward? And I was like, John, like, we were cheering for a team that won 10 games last year, 2 years ago. I was like, they won 17 games or something the year before that. I said, there's nothing left that's scary anymore. We've been through all that as fans, we've not only been through, but taken it with a smile and told everybody else how great it was. Yeah. I don't know. If we can do this, we can do anything.
The whole process was just like about hope, about like the future, about if you plan and you're patient, like it's all gonna work out. And like we have even more hope now in the form of these three guys. And then like the media just like appropriating our feelings to tell us how like projecting onto us how it's unfortunate for the fans when we're like, nah, dog, we're good. You're the one that's saying that you don't like it because you don't understand anything and you're not willing to take a second and sit down and see that this is a good idea. I just love being right. And we were right. we were so right the whole time. We would have been right if this didn't happen. We were right all along. If you just had any like fair conversation to be like, this is what it's about. Here's what we're going for. We know it's embarrassing in the short term, but like, who cares? It's just basically exposing the league as 24 teams in the league as pretty much a sham because only like five-ish teams can win a title.
Mike, I'm calling Derek.
I know, but man, we're going to have so many moments like this, but like this is the purest moment of like we did it. Everybody's wrong. Retweet Armageddon on Monday.
Yeah.
It's happening, man.
Well, let's. All right, we'll bring Derek on, and the first thing we'll talk about. Well done, thank you. That was cathartic. We'll bring Derek on and talk about Retweet Armageddon with him. He's going to have to participate in the LL commercial too. Let's see, it's ringing.
Derek's had had a girlfriend for a while. Maybe he gets a ring at LL.
Maybe
is that what we talk about?
Derek, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, for God's sakes, Bodner.
Hey, buddy.
How you guys doing?
All right, Derek, before we get to this, we have to first, we're going to have you on for some very important things, but the first thing we have to do is do the LL Pivorsky commercial. Can you play along with this while you're, even though you're not, he's not an official sponsor of you?
Sure, go for it.
Okay. LL Pivorsky Jewelers is the official sponsor of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast because LL Pivorsky is a true process truster. He's been here the whole way. In fact, LL Pivorsky tweeted out a photo of himself and Choo Choo Maduabomb last night. I want you to go and find another jeweler, not just in Philadelphia, but in all the world, that A, knows who the fuck Choo Choo Maduabomb is, and B, would take his picture with him at a gym on Saturday night in June.
That's imagining there's like a jeweler for the Blazers who has like the rights to someone overseas and is like, yeah, my favorite guy.
LL has now sold 43 engagement rings and given away one to trusters of the process and Rights Ricky Sanchez podcast listeners. He is a...
Derek, is one of those you? Are you one of those 43?
I am not.
No. Uh-huh.
Okay.
At some point.
Keep us posted.
Yep. He is a trusted member of our community. He is a good friend. He's a great jeweler, and he is going to take care of you if you go to get an engagement ring, no matter what your budget is, from $1,000 to $1 million. Let's see Lee do that $1 million ring. Here's the thing, though. If you're going to get an engagement ring from Lee, who is a fabulous person, and I think very excited that Rashawn Holmes was not included in this trade, make sure you make an appointment with Lee before you do that. You can make an appointment with Lee by either calling LL Pivorsky Jewelers at 215-627-2252, shooting him an email, which you can do at llpivorsky.com, or just sending him a tweet at llpivorsky. We trust Lee. You should, too. TTP, trust the Pivorsky. And for every podcast, as our sponsor, he makes a generous donation to the Alzheimer's Association of the Delaware Valley and the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence. LL Pivorsky Jewelers.
Not nearly as insufferable as we'll be for the next decade.
So, Derek, we plugged you in the beginning at Derek Bodner NBA. Please subscribe to Derek's Sixers coverage, which is an overwhelming amount and of overwhelming quality. It is just $3 a month, and you can do that at derekbodner.com. I am a subscriber. All my friends are. I don't have that many friends, but
I'm a subscriber. Yeah. I get the emails.
He does a great job, the best in the city, and we are proud to have him. So Derek, before we
how
get,
you feeling?
Yeah, how you feeling?
No, just how you
I'm feeling?
Feeling
great. That was incredible. That came out of left field so much, and I had no expectation. I spent the last month fretting over fits and talent and upside. That's a huge bird, man. That's awesome.
Because I always felt weird about being at three. Three was just a weird place for us to be. I mean, obviously wanted to get there in the lottery, but I just like the guys at like 5 through 8 so much more than, Lonzo or Josh Jackson or Jason Tatum, just fit wise. Even though I like Josh Jackson as a player, I just was scared. You got to be scared of the jumper.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you're sitting there after the lottery and you feel great because it's a big FU Vlade and all it means towards what Hinkie did. And then you look at it and you're like, well, but three isn't really that much difference. Like this is definitely a much better spot. It is insane to think what they quote unquote gave up to move up to three. There are going to be a lot of, like you said, obnoxious people, obnoxious content. I do think one of the things that's kind of, we talk about obviously what they did with what Sam did and his team did, with the MCW trade, with the Vlade ripoff, you wouldn't be here without that. And it's going to be written a lot. It should be written a lot. It deserves to be written. But
sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just saying, what do you think Sam's reaction is to this? Because you guys have a relationship. We haven't spoken to him. I haven't spoken to him since he left the team. But what do you think Sam is? How would he react to this trade? Just knowing him, you probably haven't talked to him. But
yeah, I mean, I assume his reaction externally would be very muted, and he's happy for the organization and kind of nonsense like that. I think he's anything that kind of gives him a little bit of indication, I think he's happy for, if for no other reason than it helps his leverage.
Yeah.
No, I think he's quietly in his own head very ecstatic.
And probably, I mean, we got to feel good for Brett Brown. That's something we haven't talked about yet, Spike. This is like Brett suffered through all this. He's got to be feeling. He's got a point guard now. He's got guys that can run in transition. When are we going to get some Brett Brown quotes out of this? Because I mean, he's got to be glowing.
He has too many point guards. Imagine that. Too many good point guards. Insane. Yeah. They made nobody. It's weird. Most days after the workouts, they've brought somebody from the front office out there to talk to the media. Whether it's Brian, he came out there once. Brandon Williams, Vince Rosman. They've brought out a bunch of guys. No Ned this year, which is kind of disappointing.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't bring anybody out last night because they didn't want anybody to say something they shouldn't, which is a kind of a very Sam philosophy. But that kind of shows you everything was on lockdown last night. Once the workout was over, they pretty much shuffled everybody out. We were kind of hoping to get Brett at one of these workouts. If he does, you know, there's still one on Monday. Nobody's going to ask about whatever fringe prospects they bring in on Monday. It'll all be about Markell.
Well, yeah, the thing yesterday is nobody could really answer any real questions, you know. No front office person could answer. Well, so let me ask you about yesterday. What was the overall vibe? What did you think of, I mean, not that it matters, but what did you think of the workout? What was the vibe with the, you know, at the facility, from press, from whatever? Paint us a picture.
Well, I mean, Markell was trash in the workout last night. He was really bad. He came off of the drive and he went out and he shot like 4 for 18 or something from three, which was very not like him. You shouldn't give one shit how he looked, though. That was nothing. You know, I tweeted out, it was probably about 80% the medical reports, 18% talking to him, and then maybe like 1 or 2% how he actually performed. The vibe was kind of like when the Sixers are at the end of a really long losing streak and about to break a record. There were a lot of media members there. I'm very much not used to that. The only time that happens is when they're setting infamous records. It was a packed gym. It was a packed gym. And I think everybody, there was certainly a lot of excitement there. There was a lot of excitement and nerves from the team. There was a lot of excitement from the media members who are finally looking at this and they're going to have a compelling team to talk about and write about. It feels very real right now. It feels very real.
Well, where was your head at, like, as it was happening? Was it like you feel like this is done, but you can't really say it's official? Or was everyone's mood? Were you getting like secret thumbs ups? Was like Markell showing up in a Sixers hat? Was that like, yeah, it's for real?
I had a pretty strong idea it was real beforehand, just from the way people talk about it. You know, there's a lot less ifs and maybes and kind of more like a wait kind of sense to it. It felt like it was very much as long as he had two attached legs. And the medical reports, I mean, considering what they've gone through, I don't know what it would have taken for them to turn him down from the medical reports.
His meniscus must be torn.
Yeah, they certainly weren't going to turn him away for that. No, it felt like it was, I mean, once this came out, this felt like it was a matter of time, which made me nervous because that never, never happens. You're waiting for another Joel Anthony, but a little higher stakes. It felt like this was a matter of time. It really did.
So, let me ask you this from a Celtics perspective. I'll take you back to our All-Star podcast after the lottery party. And we talked about the possibility of us trading with the Celtics. And the overall conclusion from all of us was probably wouldn't happen because we don't have the things that they would want to be better right now. So ultimately, why do you think that the Celtics make this particular move right now?
I think there has to be, maybe not another shoe to drop right now, but I think there has to be something else that they have up their sleeves. Like, I think, I still think they can get Gordon Hayward. I think they can go out and trade for a Jimmy Butler or Paul George. And maybe that means using both of these picks to do that. Maybe that means using the number three pick and still having another, you know, high value pick that they can, you know, push forward to another year. I think there's something else on, you know, in the back burner. I think they're looking for something. I don't know that for sure. But I can't imagine they're doing this just to get more draft picks. I mean, the reason you get 4, 5, 6 really high lottery draft picks is so you hope that one or two of them might end up being the number one pick. I can't imagine Danny Ainge is passing on this opportunity unless he really does, you know, value Josh Jackson as high. I don't necessarily buy that. I know Danny Ainge, I mean, people kind of defer to him maybe a little too much. He's obviously has a great trade record, but he also traded up at one point to draft Kelly Olynyk over Giannis. So he's not necessarily perfect in terms of the draft.
Yep.
We'll see. I don't know. I don't know what he's thinking. If it would have been both picks, which it was reported for about 10 minutes last night, that it was going to be both the Kings and the Lakers pick, maybe you can talk me into the fact that, hey, you're losing that certainty of the number one pick, but you're getting two more picks that could become that. Just for one pick, I don't, especially one pick that can't be the number one pick in 2018. I don't get it.
Yeah. I mean, how do you feel? I mean, Colangelo held his ground. I would love to have seen like the negotiations there, like what it started out as, who was balking, who was like hammering down, who was like making sacrifices, well, how the protections worked out.
At the end of the day, when you have to think that if Ainge is willing to trade the pick, he is showing his hand that he doesn't care about faults. You know what I mean? Like if he, to an even greater extent than I was saying that, you know, even if you have to reach at three, get the guy that you want, you know, there's, and especially because the guy at one and the guy at three are so different. Maybe you can value them the same in terms of value. Like, let's say they have Markelle Fultz and Josh Jackson as the same value. They're very, very, very different players. So Ainge basically shows his hand by saying, all right, I'm willing to trade it. And when you get there, the Lakers don't, unless they're going to trade Brandon Ingram or something, and don't really have the assets to get it done. You know, I don't know. I think it's maybe Brian Colangelo just won the negotiation, yeah. You know? And maybe it's fair on both sides. Maybe they just don't want Markelle Fultz.
There's also been some whispers about how Markelle really wanted to play for the Sixers and maybe didn't want to sit behind the backcourt in Boston and wait it out. Well,
I mean, there have been whispers that Josh Jackson doesn't want to do that too.
Yeah.
And the surprising thing to me, I really thought at one point that it was going to have to wait until the draft to see who was available and we would all be sitting there for 5 days panicking about whether or not it's going to fall through. But if they were willing to do that even without that assurance, either they really know what the Lakers are going to do, and I'm not sure anybody has a great grasp of that. I think you know, Lonzo is still the favorite, but I wouldn't stake the number one pick on that. Yeah. They must not have had a strong preference for Josh Jackson is the only conclusion I could have come to, which kind of makes me lean towards it being a trade, using it for a trade chip. But it is, I mean, if they thought, you know, Markelle Fultz was going to be a generational superstar, there's no way you make this trade. That's for sure.
I think so too. I think they probably were like, yeah, he's good, but he's not good enough to where we can't try to go get this guy right now. I think they're just focused on winning now. They were the number one team in the East this year. I think they're like, we just took Jaylen Brown. We don't need to sit back and take another guy. We have our guys. We're going to get guys in free agency. Let's just keep adding to it. And
that's why you don't make this trade, though. Like, you go in there with three. You know the Brooklyn picks are going to be fantastic. You're sitting here in year two before the lottery, and right now all you have to show for it is Jaylen Brown. As bad as the Nets were last year, you just had Jaylen Brown. I don't get why you get Markelle Fultz dropping into your lap and move on from that. I don't get it at all, but... Hey, I'm happy. I'm happy if Danny made a mistake.
Yeah, I mean, if they get Jimmy Butler out of this, which I don't really know why you'd trade down to go get Jimmy Butler. I feel like you could just do like one and a future one for Jimmy Butler rather than having to go through the Sixers at all. I don't know. I don't know what's going on there. I don't really care. I feel great.
Honestly, if they get Jimmy Butler, more power to him. Have at it. Sure. I don't even care. All right.
Do you feel like, I mean, like, I did a thing where I said the Sixers have the brightest future in sports. Like, would you guys agree with that? Because I feel like we do.
I certainly think in terms of, well, it's always hard because you get into the now and, you know, the Warriors could win three straight finals, and does that count as the brightest future?
I'm thinking a little bit further down the road,
I certainly think in terms of young core, this is certainly the highest upside. Like, I don't take the Bucks over this core. If we're throwing out health, which we'll never be able to do, but I don't take the Wolves over this core. I don't think it's even really close.
I'm throwing out health. Health is gone.
I
trust the medical staff implicitly, as I've always said.
I'm glad you do. But I don't think, like, if you were ranking the, you know, the six major prospects of the Sixers and Wolves, I think the Sixers have four of the top, or three of the top four. And I'm not even sure it's really all that debatable.
Right.
It's going to be a fun team to watch. It is going to be a fun team to watch.
So let me ask you about this, Derek. We had a vote yesterday from the Retweet Armageddon Congress. Now, if you are new to this, because if I'm looking at statistics, there are plenty of new people that are listening to this podcast. Retweet Armageddon is something that we have talked about for a long time, that when we are proven to be right, that we will retweet, we will have a mass retweet of all the old bad takes from other people it's sort of like the launching point of a decade of insufferability that's about to come.
Yes.
And to take this Retweet Armageddon one step more absurd, we put together, because there became a debate as to when Retweet Armageddon should happen. So we put together a 10-person Congress, a Retweet Armageddon Congress, that would vote on measures that when Retweet Armageddon would happen. So
do you want to read who the Congress is, just so everybody knows?
Yes. So the Retweet Armageddon Congress is me and Mike, Derek, Danny Chow, who is our national media representative, who currently writes for The Ringer, Max Rappaport, who is one day going to start a podcast about the Sixers, Mike Weber, the Spike Lee of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, Liz Rocher, who writes for The Good Fight, mm-hmm. And she is our Phillies representative, Brandon Lee Gouton, a sometimes Liberty Ballers writer, Liberty Ballers alumni, and the editor of BleedingGreenNation.com. And then we had two fan spots, two listener spots that we put up to a vote, and they are Rob McNamara from Mount Airy and Brett Ling from Perth, Australia.
There was a local and an international element.
So the way that the vote goes is that a majority vote passes the bill. So six people have
this is all real, this. By the way.
Yes, this is a real thing.
It's a real thing. It's totally legit.
So here,
and I'll tell you what, some of these people, I'm very impressed with how seriously Weber takes this.
Yes, he has
serious thoughts about this.
Yeah.
Yes, he does.
I was thinking as I was arguing in the last one, as I was getting pissy, because up until Weber went for glory in this last measure, I was the only one to propose any bills in Retweet Armageddon Congress. I'm going to be honest with you. I was getting very frustrated with the Congress, and I felt like one had a real chance of passing. You know, Embiid making the All-Star game was a bill at one point that got shot down, whatever. And I was also thinking all of this seriousness in the emails, it might be a funny dump on a giant post to print out all the emails.
Sure. I think our only question was like, how far away from Hinkie's dismissal can we go?
Right.
And so there's always been a clock on it a little bit, and so it felt like it we were talking about the Rookie of the Year stuff, which I can't believe that hasn't been announced yet. It feels like it's so far away.
Yeah, next week.
But it seemed like this is the most like using Hinkie's stuff to get another guy and having a trio that can compete with anybody in the league. This feels right. So I submitted it to the Congress last night. And,
well, just to clarify, Weber submitted like a for somebody who voted no, you know, with all of his self-importance several times, submitted a very incomplete bill on Friday night suggesting that this trade launch Retweet Armageddon without even knowing the details of the fucking trade. But you submitted this last night. It went, I think, did it go unopposed, basically? I don't think I've seen a vote from Danny Chow yet.
Yeah, Danny Chow has not voted, but everybody else has voted, yes. So I guess Danny's abstaining.
Right. So the bill so the measure passes and Retweet Armageddon officially happens when the press release from the trade, when the trade becomes official. We're assuming on Derek, Monday is the time, right? That's when we're assuming this happens.
Yep.
When the trade becomes official. So here are the things that now not everybody has these tweets saved, right? But you're going to want to retweet them anyway.
You'll find them.
Tall Sixers and Eagles blogger you'll want to go check out.
Well,
I imagine Brandon will be working the ones and twos.
I'm going to tell people where to go. The first thing is, well, first of all, do we need a hashtag?
Well, we're just retweeting, though, for the most part.
Yeah, but
I think,
if people want to quote tweet and stuff, just retweet Armageddon.
I think probably spell it out or RT Armageddon. What do you guys think?
Derek?
I'm a little worried how many people are going to misspell Armageddon, but yes, that sounds great.
Okay, so why don't we say RT? Let's just say
I just
retweet
searched RTA, and there are RTA hashtags out there.
I think people will be confused. I think you want to say RTA. I trust people to spell Armageddon right, or at least Google how to spell Armageddon.
Okay, so what are we doing? What are we saying the official hashtag is?
I think RT Armageddon.
Okay, the official hashtag.
It's two D's, right? I'm just making sure I can spell it.
Yes, it's two D's.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Two D's, one G.
So the official hashtag is RT Armageddon. And here are the two people I would tell you that the best people to follow for this. First is Brandon Lee Gouton, who All you have to do is go through his likes on Twitter. He's saved a lot of bad takes, and he will retweet all of them. Some of them are ours. And the second person is the most dangerous of all Twitter people. Wouldn't you say, Derek?
You said that the other day, where anytime he likes something that you tweet, you panic, and it's the exact same feeling. It's the exact same feeling. I think he actually does like some stuff that like he legitimately likes, but I can't differentiate. I can't.
Yeah. Okay. So on Twitter, he is at Ham Sinky. So it's Sam Hinkie with the S and the H flipped, at Ham Sinky. The scariest thing about this guy, and Mike, I don't know how often you look at what he does. I know Derek sees a lot of it. Here's the scariest thing about this guy. He doesn't just – first of all, he doesn't have just have tweets. He has deleted tweets. He has screenshots of every tweet. But he also has, at his fingertips, it seems, every article that everyone has written, every video clip. Like, John Smallwood will write something, and all of a sudden, it's every time John Smallwood has said something contrary to what he just said. I've never seen anything like it. He is by far the most frightening person on the internet, but he is a valuable resource for this. So
I love it.
Yeah.
So we'll have more details tomorrow, I guess, but that's about it. It'll happen when the press release comes out.
Yeah.
And that's, Derek, I had a question. At the draft, will Fultz be putting on a Sixers hat? Will it be like the Sixers have the first pick, this is happening, or is it not going to go through until afterwards?
No, I think it's going to be approved. I think that it's going to be the Sixers on the clock at number one. It's the way it's been described to me, at least.
Wow.
It's unreal.
It's going to be great.
So, Derek, and one final thing. It's funny you were mentioning all this work you were doing, talking about fit. We were talking before you came on about the last 6 weeks of podcast just being
worthless,
the ultimate trash, right? But
I recorded one with Mike O'Connor. He's from Sixer Sense and B-Ball Breakdown. He's a really good guy that I think probably deserves about five times as many, probably 10 times as many followers as he has. I was excited to get him on, and then it just 2 hours later, I deleted the fucker. It was very annoying.
Well, let me ask you this. If we had not made this trade, if Fultz had gone one and Ball had gone two, who did you settle on for number three?
I was still on the Jonathan Isaac bandwagon. I would have had my peace with Jackson, just because like there's always that, like I'm so very concerned about that shot, but there's always that, well, what if I'm wrong? What if he improves? What if it works? And you know, I cast him aside because I didn't think it would work, because if his jump shot came along, he would have been a valuable piece. I just wouldn't have had necessarily the confidence in it.
Right.
Yeah.
Wasn't a great spot though.
No, it wasn't a great spot. It just wasn't. Can you talk about, we're getting to the second round prospects, Derek. You know we're getting there. Spike's going to just put himself on mute and just fall asleep. But before we get there, just talk about why Markelle Fultz is such head and shoulders above everybody else in this draft class.
Mike, can I just say, good question. I think that's a good question.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Derek.
I mean, I guess my question would be, what can't he do? Like, I would almost answer that with a question. Like, he can do pretty much anything. He can get to the rim. I think his vision is probably underrated, because he had to carry like a 36% usage or something on that dog shit Washington team. So he can play the pick and roll. He can pass out of the pick and roll. He can find cutters. He can push the ball in transition. He can shoot off the dribble. He can shoot off the catch. He even has, like, I think he's going to end up being a decent enough contributor on defense, not necessarily a stopper, but I think he'll make plays at the very least. I do. You go back and you watch some of his games, I thought he played decent defense in some of the tournaments he was in when he wasn't asked to be the entire offense. Yeah. And I mean, that culture he was in Washington was just so awful that it's, you don't want to throw it out because he was disinterested, but even that, I have confidence he can improve if Brett Brown gets through to him.
You got it. And he went to Washington expecting to play with Deontay Murray and Marquise Chris.
Sure. So and he, I mean, he went there because he was recruited. Like he had a growth spurt. He really improved late. He was cut from his sophomore team in high school, but Washington recruited him very early, and he was kind of, you know, he was very, he was held to that. He wanted to stick to them. He wanted to reward them for recruiting him early. And that was, I mean, with the talent they lost and the recruiting misses they had, they were painful to watch. They really were.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that we do with prospects, because I was going to bring up the two things that I had a question about Fultz with, is what we do is, because there is so much analysis now, it's almost like with every guy we try to figure out why they're not perfect. So their inadequacies become so glaring. You know, even the guys that you know, I think maybe 20 years ago we would not have. Now, maybe our information also wouldn't have been as good, but we go, oh, well, the shot makes him undraftable. And, you know, his defense makes him undraftable. And we're constantly in this search for the perfect prospect. So I'm saying I'm aware of that as I'm asking you this. The two things the question I have, the first is he doesn't appear to be, he's just not that kind of player, I guess, particularly explosive. And at least compared to some of the other, you know, guard prospects in the top 15. And then the other thing is he's got sort of a strange, had a really maybe better three-point shooting year than he actually is. So what are your thoughts on the explosiveness and the jumper?
Yeah, I mean, explosiveness, I wouldn't say he's a below-average athlete by any stretch of the imagination, or at least below-average explosiveness. I think he's probably average, above average in that regard. I think he said he had like a 40-inch vertical, something in that range. But I think where his athleticism really comes in is his balance, his coordination, his his footwork, his body control, that kind of stuff. Like, he's never out of control at any point. And I think that's really, you know, he's a much more functional athlete, I think, than he would be the guy you would kind of see Dennis Smith throwing down on top of somebody. So I don't worry about his athleticism at all. You know, you hate comparing him to this because this guy's a, you know, all-timer. But Chris Paul lost two or three steps in athleticism, and he's still incredible. And a large part of that is not just his talent level, but also his other athletic traits in terms of, like I said, body control and coordination and whatnot. So I think he's going to be – I don't worry about that very much at all.
He just always looks smooth. Like, he always looks smooth with the ball. There's like plays he makes that like other guys would look awkward doing it or choppy, and he just finds a way to make it seem like he can get anywhere on the court, even in like awkward areas. It seems like he's always like running downhill, I think.
Yeah, I mean, so many guys are great athletes, but they meet a little bit of resistance, or they get a little bump on their drive, or a defender comes from the wing that they weren't expecting, and they're done. It's a turnover. It's a bad shot, which is basically a turnover. He looks like he's about to turn it over, and then he has this gorgeous layup off the glass that just sinks in, or he finds a guy in the corner, because he is able to regain control like that. He's under control is a good way to describe it.
It's like a herky jerky dribble. He's like really good at change of pace.
He's gonna do some in and out spin moves that are just gonna blow people's minds. If you haven't been watching him on YouTube, it's gonna be fun to watch.
It's really fun. He's very good, and I think defensively he's gonna be able to cover. He's got a 6'10 wingspan. He's going to be able to cover 1-3, or at least switch onto 1-3.
Yeah. You can put him. I talked about this a little bit with Lonzo Ball, where you can hide him a little bit because he can defend pretty much the weakest perimeter player. You can do a little bit of that with Fultz as well. And he has some of those same quick twitch, you know, passing lane instincts that he can, like I said, he'll never be a shutdown guy, but I think he can add value.
The jump shot, because he shot like only what, 67-68% from the foul line, and then much better from three, or at least percentage wise.
Yeah, like 41%, something like that from three. I think he's a little more comfortable off the dribble. I think he's a really good shooter off the dribble, a little less so off the catch. It's a little bit of a long release, which I think is probably more the concern than it is whether or not he can make them. But I don't see anything really completely broken. I think a lot of it is footwork. I think he can quicken up his footwork. He kind of has that half 1-2 step into a shot that maybe you want to get rid of so we can get the shot off quicker. But I don't really have too much of a concern. I know he shot like shit last night, and a lot of people jumped into a quick concern. But you go back and you look at some of his tape from the Boston workout, and he shot, you know, pretty much perfectly. I think his shot's going to translate. With any of these guys, it's a little bit. He's not the type of guy like Lonzo where he was shooting 26 footers on the regular basis. So maybe there's going to be a little bit of adjustment to the NBA 3, but I think it's going to get there.
Well, let me ask you this. As a guy who's been around the team, somebody asked me this on Twitter, and I thought it was actually really pretty important and profound. It does seem to me like Luwawu is the kind of guy who wouldn't give up his number for Fultz. What do you think?
Luwawu's confident. Who knows? It's tough for a mid-20s pick to kind of have those stones to say that. That will be a fascinating story. I think ultimately he gets it, though. I think there's going to be maybe an exchange of money, which might seal the deal, but I think he's going to get it.
Right.
I wonder, because I would like Fultz to go down a little bit. I want a single digit on Fultz. I like a point guard with a single digit.
Yeah.
That's my preference. Maybe three.
I think he's the only top 10 pick who doesn't have a single digit number.
Yeah.
Which I don't think I've ever thought about before. Just this moment.
Yeah.
When we talk about, we did a little more like process introspection, as Spike and I are wont to do. Just to get your thoughts on like overall, like going from the Bynum trade to now, like how do you feel? How do you feel like the journey was? Do you have any like now looking back? This wasn't as big of a deal, or you know, it's
everything
all
wasn't as big of a deal. Everything we've ever talked about wasn't as big of a deal.
Yeah.
Everything that other media members talked about wasn't as big of a deal. Oh no, we don't have a point guard. Well, now we have two. You know, I think if you look at it, you can't say it's best case scenario because everyone's going to point to, you know, Kristaps and Giannis and things like that.
There's going to be misses.
But if you had like realistic best case scenario, if you were to take me in 2013 and you said by 2017, we're going to have this guy and this guy and this guy and this guy. And oh, by the way, we're still going to have a Kings pick or a Lakers pick or whichever one you end up keeping. This core group of three people plus Dario plus Covington. I'm going to throw TJ in there because I know you'll want that.
Thank you.
Playing to my audience. This is about as best case scenario with that cap space as you could have really hoped for. And maybe it didn't look like that at various points. And I think that pretty much defines trust the process, because whatever it looks like right now, it's, you know, there's reasons to be optimistic. There's measures we've taken to make sure that we have, we can pounce on the right opportunity. I would have never, I mean, we can go back over the history of the Sixers draftees. This might be, you know, three of the four best in terms of talent and upside draft picks you've had since Barkley left. I mean, that's absurd to walk out of a 4-year period with that. And I think when you take a step back, it should be pretty freaking obvious that this has worked out in a very positive way.
Man,
you want to do your second round pick?
No, I want to really nice. Quick just to because I think people want to hear it. Free agent wise, okay. if you
another peg, good if, question, Mike. I had this written down. I forgot about it. Good question.
If you peg, because I'm with you. I think Dario should be sixth man. If you peg Fultz at the one, Covington at the three, Simmons at the four, Embiid at the five, who and there's money to spend, who do you go after as your two guard? Or are you saying we can get by with a Henderson and a Luwawu and a Stauskas this year, or like a Justin Anderson and wait till next year? But is there somebody, I know we've talked about KCP, but is there somebody else that you guys are that you're thinking about, or you're hearing about that the Sixers are going to want to target?
Justin Anderson sucks. I just want to throw that out there. Good guy, I'm sure, but yeah, I don't want to see him play. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I think if you can go out and get a guy like KCP, because I think he could be the theoretical perfect fit in terms of his defense and his a little bit streaky but still outside shooting ability. If you can't get him, I would be a little selective. I think the main priority, because I mean, look at this team. When you're looking at this and a playoff team and a decent playoff team, there's not many positions you have to fill. I think if you're 80% of your starting lineup is what it will be. And you can even throw Dario in there as a six man. Now you've got five out of six positions really filled. And really all you need now is time, experience, and health, which aren't insignificant factors. But I don't think you have to go out there and really rush to make a splash, far less than you would have before, because you have so much more certainty. So I'd be really, you know, KCP, if they're not going to match it, sure, I'll take a look. But I'm not going to, like, my interest in a guy like, and maybe if Redick will come for a 2 or 3 year deal, because I think ultimately, if in 6 months you're saying, okay, well, Redick's not really going to help us, like this playoff push isn't legitimate, Redick's the difference between, you know, maybe 37 wins and 34 wins. Let's see if we can trade him. I think you'll.
Oh, Derek, you're low. Derek, you're low.
I
low.
Well, by the way,
No. I'm saying that's my worst case scenario. I think if it doesn't work out the way you wanted.
I think they're going to go very, 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 very hard after Redick.
I think they will too. But I think the reason what I'm saying is, even if it doesn't work out how you expect, you can move him. I think he's going to be the type of guy that you can move. So I think I'd have interest in him too. But I'd be very, I think my biggest priority this offseason is renegotiating Robert Covington in November and making him a long-term part of the team, and a long-term part of the team that's going to be underpaid in future years. Because I'm kind of okay if you come into the season if maybe Reddick doesn't work out, if maybe KCP doesn't work out, if you come into the season, you say, okay, we've got these young guys. We're going to give Luwawu a little bit of a shot here, see what he can really develop and if he can be another long-term cheap piece and see if that works out, and then go into next summer with a little more information. I want Covington renegotiated and extended. That's my main priority.
They can't How do that till November, right? Hold on. They can't
Correct.
Do that till Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Correct. How much do you think he gets?
I think I floated out there. Like, if you start off, if you renegotiate this year to $20 million, you can then start his next contract at 60% of that. So I think I would go like $20 million this year and then go down to like $12 million next year, 11, 10, kind of descend like that. And maybe you can still get him, you know, like a four-year, $60 million, was essentially a four-year, $60 million deal, because you're giving him $18 million more this year.
I'd be very okay with that.
I think it's probably going to be a little more than that, though. And yeah. I'd be okay with that, too.
Do you think that they will go spend big money at somebody, like, whether it's like a even like a Lowry's probably out of the picture for now. He probably wouldn't want to come here.
God, I hope so.
But, you know, like a, even like a Drew or a Gallinari or a George Hill or those kinds of guys that, like, you know, sort of like very good, but still like stopgappy things. Do you think Colangelo and company are going to be like, no, we gotta still make splashes?
I think they're going to try to make a splash. Yeah. And look, yeah. I mean, they've kind of appeased this portion of the fan base very well right now. So I think they have a little bit of leeway. But I also, I do think they want to make that big improvement in the win column. And I'm a little more okay with it now because you have, I mean, it would be really difficult to screw this up in a major way. Yeah. And I will give them credit. You know, when we, obviously Hinkie and his team made the moves that made this possible. But they had a lot of options they could have gone in this season. Mm-hmm. And whether that's a trade for a guy like George or Butler or a lesser guy like that, where it's overpaying guys in free agency, they could have gone in many different ways. And I think they ended up choosing, you know, if you say they have all of these picks and assets and cap room and whatnot to choose a direction, I think they ended up picking the best possible direction. So I give them a lot of credit. This is kind of, to me, like when, you know, maybe the fractions, I don't want to say they won't be as divided, but I think I think they bought a little bit of credibility on this one.
I think they did too.
Well, one free agent thing too, that they must be what, $30 or $40 million under the salary floor at this point.
Yep.
Like, so they're, you know, I don't want to talk about, you know, I think NBA teams have shown that the floor doesn't matter, but also, like, you still have to spend the money anyway, so you might as well spend it on something if you can't do some tricky, you know, trade a guy halfway through and get full credit thing. So I think they have the room to go after. They will see it as the room to go after. So as long as it's not a super long commitment to one of those older guys, I think it's fine. I think Reddick would be fine. I love Reddick. So, you know, I'd be fine with a $3 or $60 million deal for Reddick or something.
Yeah, I think I'd be okay with that too. It's the benefit they have is that Embiid's up next year. I'm interested to see how much he'd get if it's like if there's a friendliness of the of an injury. Hey, you're not gonna have to pay me everything. I feel like it's gonna have to be everything, which I'd be fine with. And then you get Simmons in a couple years after that, and then Fultz a couple years after. So it's staggered nicely to where you can, as the cap keeps going up, like stay afloat without committing everything to these guys right away.
You also gotta extend Okafor though.
Look, have you heard anything about any Spike? We did it too many times.
Okay.
we got.
Derek, talk about his post moves. I'm sorry. Okay.
Right. Have you heard anything about any Okafor whispers? He was at the practice facility yesterday. There were I was thinking maybe that was for a possible medical report.
Yeah. No, I heard nothing about him being involved in this deal, and nothing that is imminent. I do think they're going to try to move him and move him on draft night, but I don't know of anything that is close.
Okay. Sorry. Well, let's get into the second round. Spike, turn your mic off. Obviously, the target is now wing guys, just an influx of wing rotation players to see who clicks, whether it's Luwawu, obviously someone to pair with Covington. If Justin Anderson's jumper gets better and he learns how to actually defend rather than just theoretically, who are some of your favorite second round prospects? We got four second round picks, and then maybe even like late first, because, you know, you got to assume that there's going to be some talk of packaging a couple of them up to move up a little bit. What do you think?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this isn't going to be exactly eye-opening, but I do like Derek White quite a bit. Yeah. And I think his shot, his versatility, his general feel and knowledge of the game, I think he would end up being, you know, a really good, really good addition to this team. I think you're probably going to have to move up to get him. It seems like his stock has moved up quite a bit of late. You know, it's tough. I like Jordan Bell a ton. I don't know exactly how he fits. Certainly you have depth at that spot, but I think you can really, you can do a lot worse than him in the early second round.
I think just Jordan Bell for a sec, I think that he would be a great fit because you could put him with Simmons, you can put him with Dario, you can run him in the pick and roll with any of the point guards. Embiid obviously is not a guarantee to be healthy for everything. Rashawn is not, profiles eventually as a pretty good defender, but isn't quite there yet aside from the shot blocking. So I think, and you can even put Bell and Rashawn together and tell Bell to cover the perimeter and stuff. So I sort of think that you can mix and match, and he's a guy that Brett would like around, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, for sure. Wesley Iwundu, I would say, is a guy that I think would be interesting. Mm-hmm. He improved his shot in such a big way. I'm not sure I completely buy that improvement, but he is, you know, and I think there's a lot to not like about him. Like, I think if it wasn't for the Sixers, if it wasn't the Sixers spot, some of his, you know, limitations offensively, his handles, his maybe offensive IQ would maybe drive me a little bit insane. But he is still 6'7 with a 7-foot wingspan. He showed improvement as a shooter this year as a senior, gives effort defensively. I think he would end up being a pretty interesting piece that I would take a flyer on later in the second round. I'm not sure how long he's going to last, but I think, you know, I think he's a reasonable gamble. Semi Ojeleye, I like a little bit. He's a little more of a power forward than a small forward. But I think, you know, again, he improved so much as a shooter from three. Not maybe the quickest lateral athlete, but he has, you know, he has a build for it. He has the aggressiveness defensively. I think he's going to end up being a decent enough option. Ooh boy, really open. I'm scrolling through right now trying to. I mean, it's boring. I almost hate saying the local kid because people tend to overrate those, but Josh Hart would certainly be a fit. PJ Dozier, again, if his shot might make him undraftable or unplayable.
Yeah.
But his defensive tools are so unique that you kind of just take him, stick him in, you know, in the D League for a year or two and see if your coaches can make some progress on him. I would have some interest there. I think I'm more interested in the versatile defenders right now than I am really the knockdown shooters. Like a guy like, you know, Tyler Dorsey, I think I have a little less interest in some of these toolsy defenders who might end up being something.
Do you think, so what does the Fultz acquisition do for the kind of player you're looking for at the wings? Like, does it, because now it seems like we don't need, like if you had a Malik Monk at point guard, then it seems like you'd want a wing guy who could create a little who could move around. Is that less important now?
Oh, for sure. I mean, we spent so much time talking about, is Ben Simmons a point guard? And I kind of hated that argument by the end. But I do think you wanted a secondary playmaker alongside him. And now you have a guy who, for most teams, could be a primary perimeter playmaker. So I think you definitely need a spot-up shooter, a guy who can cut, a guy who can get out and transition. And maybe that second ball handler in the pick and roll, you need much, much less than you would have before. I think that's 100% fair.
Offensively wise, we still have... Fultz will be able to get to the basket, but a guy that for whatever reason I'm now targeting even more. I think you know, I would like one of those defensive minded guys. For me, it's, you know, Sterling Brown, just sit in the corner, D out. I like Sindarius.
He's already playing that role.
Yeah, I like Sindarius Thornwell a lot. But a guy that I would think that could become a weaponized offensive player is Dylan Brooks. He fights on defense, but he's not really.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the tools to get there. What do you think about him at the next level?
I think. I think two things. First of all, I think, like you said, he will play, compete defensively. He doesn't have. He does have limitations that he's gonna. You know, I worry about a little bit. I think more than that, though, I worry about his shot selection a little bit because I do think he can very much fill a role offensively as, you know, kind of that fifth option to catch and shoot and create a little bit attacking a closeout. I worry whether or not, you know, first of all, I don't think he has the quickness or the ball handling or the shake to really play like he did at Oregon. But I also think, you know, can he accept a lesser role? And I think that's probably my biggest question with him, because if he can, I mean, I definitely then do think he can, you know, I do think he can fill a role. It's just, you know, he had a little bit higher of a role, not a little bit, a lot higher of a role than he will in the NBA. And I don't necessarily see that role translating very well at all. So can he kind of shift into being more of an off-ball, non-focal point? And if he can, then yes, I do like him.
A couple more specific guys, and then we'll wrap it up. VJ Beachum is a guy that I haven't really been talked about much, but he might be one of the best pure shooters in the draft. Do you believe that his body, because he's long, but he's pretty thin. Do you think that he'll be able to defend at the NBA level?
You know, he had a little bit of a down year this year shooting, but I think I trust that shot a lot. I mean, he has such a track record over the last the 2 years really before then at Notre Dame. I know he didn't play a whole lot as a sophomore, but I trust that shot. I trust that defense a little bit less. And I think you're right in that being able to compete physically, I think that's a little bit of a question mark. He does have, again, a pretty good wingspan, not quite an insane wingspan for his size. I think he can move his feet a little bit well. I wouldn't say I necessarily like him. He's not at the top, but I do like him. I do like his profile that he could become. I do question a little bit whether or not that that defense is going to translate, though. I think he might end up being more of a 3 than a 3-and-D.
With the two-way contracts that the D-League teams will have now, who are some guys that you would look at in that area for guys, even if they're not going to be drafted, but guys that you think could become that eventual wait a couple years and use him from there? I mean, Terrence Ferguson is probably going to be a late first-round pick, so I don't know if he'll be available for that, but even lower in the I'm thinking more like Frank Jackson, Kobe Simmons kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, Ferguson might end up. I'm not 100% sold on his stock being as solidified as maybe it seems like, because I think there's so little knowledge. He played such a small role over there in Australia that I could see him kind of falling maybe more than people expect. We'll see. It's that portion of the draft is so weird because there's 175 centers, so somebody might end up just saying, I need a wing, and he's the best available and take him. And then you have some of the interesting European guys, and this was an awful international draft. But a guy like Alberto Abaldi, I'm not entirely sure how to say that because I always listen to it in Serbian, and I'm not sure how it's pronounced. But I think he would be interesting. You know, he was in the ACB.
You always listen to it in Serbian. What is that? Or does that mean
well, like announcers are Serbian?
Oh, okay. I thought you were listening to like Serbian podcasts. I was like, how the fuck?
No. Okay. Actually, he was on loan in the ACB. He has, he's another guy that I kind of like. You're not going to ask him to really create from the perimeter, and on another team that might be a bigger deal. But I think he's a pretty well-rounded player. He's kind of like a jack of all trades type, and he's had a little bit of a down year shooting, but I think he could play. But all of these perimeter or these international guys, they're not going to come over here and play on a two-way contract. I think one of the guys I previously mentioned in Dozier, I think would be a pretty interesting option in that role, because I don't think he's going to get a high enough second round pick where he's going to be able to command a quote unquote real contract. He's probably the type of guy who might've been fighting for an overseas contract anyway. So maybe you can make a compelling case now that he should come over. I think Sterling Brown would be an interesting spot there. Not that you're necessarily going to expect him to develop all that much. A guy like Dozier is a lot more, he might have more in him to untap. Whereas Brown's a little more, a little more defined in who he is. But yeah, I mean, I could see that. I'm not sure. It's tough because a lot of those guys at the end of the draft are kind of more the seniors, and they're not necessarily the best for those roles anyway. Like, I have a lot of interest in Sindarius Thornwell, but I think he's made so much progress that, again, he might be a little more defined in who he is, and maybe he's not necessarily looking to go there. Yeah. It'll be interesting. I'm not sure if people really understand how they're going to use those two-way contracts and really which players are going to accept them, because they're still a pretty low offer in terms of money.
Yeah. All right, last question, Spike. We'll wrap it up. OG Anunoby, Spike's boy Og is dropping. He's currently 21 on the Draft Express mock draft. That seems very low to me. Now that we have a ton of creation, and I know we're looking for shooting, he has defensive abilities that could be Draymond-esque. Is he a guy that, if he slips into like the late teens, early 20s, are you trying to move up to get him, even though the shot is a concern and he probably profiles more as a 4?
Oh, I mean, that shot is a huge concern. And he shot well as a freshman on like a no sample size.
Yeah.
he has a lot of jumpers very flat. His guide hand, I don't like what he's doing. He really can't handle the ball at all. But he has defensive versatility for days. I would absolutely see if I can move up and get him. And you're right, he probably projects, you know, we talk about versatility, but he probably starts off more as a power forward. And then you say you can switch him on pretty much any action.
Yeah.
I would have a lot of interest in him. I'm not sure how far he falls. I do think there's so much talk about having that versatility and the benefit it provides that I think somebody's going to end up reaching on him. I think the fact that, like I said, it's such a center-heavy portion of the draft should help him and prevent him from falling too far. But there's a lot of reason to be concerned about that offensive game, about that shot, about that ability to really do anything with the ball. But man, I just love a guy like that who you can say, here, go switch any ball screen you want, and who can really hold his own doing so. He would be a heck of a get if you can.
Go switch every ball screen you want.
All right.
He's a little bit too tall, though.
Too tall.
Oh, not your guy.
Really. He's only 6'8", but I had to get a too tall reference.
Too tall.
Yeah, we don't.
Spike, you got to go, right?
Yeah, I got to go.
This is great. Markel Fultz can be a Sixer.
Yep.
I feel good, man. Derek, you feel good? You feel like a lot of vindication?
I feel real good. Hey, guys, congratulations on getting in the top 20 yesterday.
Yeah, I know.
wasn't quite top 13. But it was good.
I know.
When you have fucking Sixers in the name, I think you get a little bit of a benefit.
I'll tell you.
No one's searching for Ricky Sanchez podcasts.
But I will tell you this. They're going to be very disappointed when they find only one podcast on your fucking feed, Derek. That's all I'm going to say. So thanks to Derek for coming on again. You can follow him at Derek Bodner NBA and support good journalism as a Sixers fan. It's going to become... it's going to be a wild world out there with a lot of people, with a lot of takes and a lot of coverage, but you want the best coverage and the guy that has been with you through all this, and that's Derek. And you can subscribe, get all of this. I'm telling you, it's almost too much Sixers content at DerekBodner.com. It's $3 a month and it's worth every penny. Thank you.
ESPN is going to have their own Sixers guy. It's going to be fucking Windhorse is going to have to start covering the Sixers.
All right, Derek. Thank you, man.
My pleasure. Take care, guys.
All right. Thanks, Derek.
All right, so we'll do one more. We're gonna have very little to talk about on our final pre-podcast.
I want you to do some second round YouTubing.
I'll do that. Can you send me a list of guys?
Yeah. I'll send you my list.
Okay, and then so we'll talk about it before, and then we'll talk about it after. Yeah. So that way, afterwards, I'll have some opinions on Thursday night. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. We will talk to you soon. Thank you for listening. This has been the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. And as a reminder, we'll do one more podcast before the draft and then one the night of the draft after the draft. This has been the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, proudly brought to you by LL Pavorsky Jewelers, where Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged, 707 Walnut in Philly, always at llpavorsky.com. Are you down with TTP?
Ooh, almost.
Almost. All right, see you, man.
See you, pal. Yeah.